Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 53 of Yins Are Good, the podcast that brings you good news. We share and celebrate all of the good stuff happening out there and all of the good people who are making it so. I am your host, Tressa Glover, and I'm so glad to be back with you, to be sharing some more time with you. And I hope you're doing well. And I have a story that I want to share with you right off the bat here. An act of kindness from this week. So I was on my way to a meeting and I had to stop. I had to make a quick jaunt into Giant Eagle, like you do. And so I just grabbed my debit card, put it in my back pocket, go in, right? And I grabbed a few things and hurried out, got to my meeting. And as I was settling in to that meeting, I realized that my debit card was not in my back pocket any longer. And I didn't have a memory of putting it back into my wallet when I got back into the car. The worst feeling. I checked my wallet, of course. I checked my purse. Nothing. I was able to run out to my car to check. Nothing. And so, of course, I'm thinking, it's gone. Maybe I left it in the self-checkout lane, or probably it fell out of my pocket somewhere in Giant Eagle. It's gone. And so as soon as the meeting was over, maybe about 45 minutes, I thought, well, I got to give it a shot. So I called customer service at Giant Eagle. And I said, I just have a question. I was there, you know. And lo and behold, it was there at customer service. Someone found it, turned it in. And honestly, when the woman said, yes, we have it right here, I said, no, you don't. Seriously? You actually have it? And she was like, yes. I said, I'm so sorry. I'm just taking a moment to be so grateful that someone did this. And then she laughed and I said, I didn't expect it necessarily. So I want to thank that Giant Eagle stranger, whoever you are, for not keeping the card and trying to use it. And then for taking the time after seeing it, wherever it was, to take it to a safe place so that I could retrieve it. Yins are good. Now, listeners, do you have a story like this? Or is there someone in your life who makes your life better? Someone you want to thank for something they've done for you or are currently doing for you? You know we want to hear your stories. We want to share them because we are here to remind each other of all of the good deeds, of all of the kind moments, of all of the helpers that are out there. Please send your story, your moment, etc. to yinsaregood@gmail.com. I'm so excited for what's coming up today, by the way. Well, first, Don DiGiulio returns after a 2-week hiatus from Name That Neighborhood. So there's that. Also, Lori Moser and Marshall Cohen are back. Not only to fill us in on all the new details of the Greater Pittsburgh Festival of Books going on Saturday, May 14th, but also to chat about building community, about the importance of storytelling. And this time they are accompanied by a new guest to Yins Are Good, one of the featured authors of the Festival of Books, Dr. Rachel Callum Whitman. Oh, we had such fun, the four of us. We really did. And I really hope that all of you who are in the area are able to make it out for at least part of the day on the 14th. It's going to be quite the event. It's going to be quite the community celebration, as you're going to hear. So, should we just get to it? Yes? Let's get to all this good stuff. That's funny. How long have you been married?
So we actually met, we are child or high school sweethearts. We
Oh.
met, I was 14 and he was 13.
Oh my.
And we met, but the path to love is very circuitous. And so we kind of, phased in and out of each other's lives. And
Hello.
then, oh, yay, Marshall's here.
Marshall.
Hello. Keep going.
Rachel was just telling us, I asked how long she and her husband had been married, and they were childhood sweethearts.
Yeah, so, but we are celebrating our 10-year wedding anniversary in May, but we've been together now for like 16 years.
Wow,
Yeah,
that's
so
great.
he, but we went to a junior prom together, so
Oh my
yeah.
gosh. And I'm sure you have pictures of
Oh, we
said
have,
junior prom.
oh, and actually, we accidentally got married 10 years to the day of the junior prom. We just had no idea that we picked the exact same day.
You're kidding.
Yeah, and so one of his friends told us that we were like, oh, well, that is quite the cute little love story. So even though he read his vows off an iPad, at least I have that,
That's right. The universe, it was meant to
It
be,
was meant to
but
be. Yes, I'd like to think that way too.
Oh, I'm just so happy to have you all here and to have Lori and Marshall, of course, back and Dr. Rachel Kellum Whitman here for the first time. And I cannot wait to have my listeners and myself learn even more about what's happening with the Festival of Books. So maybe could we just start off? Actually, could we start with you, Rachel? Could you please tell us a little bit about you and, your connection with the festival and
Sure. So again, yeah, my name is Rachel Callum Whitman, and I am an adjunct faculty member at Duquesne. And my area of expertise, I teach disability studies courses there. And I also am a self-advocate who lives with bipolar disorder. And so I come connected to this work as a professional because it's personally really significant to me and kind of the path that I've been on. And really, as we kind of talk about the power of storytelling, I'm excited to just kind of share how telling my story really did save my life. And being a part of the Festival of Books has been just so exciting because the energy is there and the community will be there. And I really just think this is going to be such a just triumphant way to get people together to share stories. So I'm really excited and honored to be a part of it.
And when you said how telling your story saved your life, and that's even on this show come up several times with folks that
Yeah.
we've had on, and it's so, and storytelling in general, of course. And I yes, as you said, I can't wait to dive into that even more. So thank you. And okay, Marshall and Lori, want to give us a little recap of yourselves?
Well, there's nothing left of me.
We have ground Laurie
The
down.
recap,
We have ground
and
Laurie
Marshall will
down.
fill
Yeah.
in what I forget. And I fill in what he forgets, but we are proud to say that we now have 30 authors who will be presenting all through the day at five venues, including the library, the East Liberty Library, that is Kelly Strayhorn, Duolingo, East Liberty Presbyterian Church, and at Bakery Square. So we have 30 authors. We have 25 poets who are going to read all day long in the Poetry Aloud tent. That's at Bakery Square. And that's being sponsored with help from Pittsburgh Arts and Lectures. And we are just so thrilled to be partners with them on this. As far as kids go, we have probably close to 20 children's authors and illustrators, and they're going to hang out at the Carnegie Library, CLP in East Liberty, and also at the Maverick. And in the Maverick, we're going to have part of the Remake Learning Days, we're going to have all kinds of hands-on activities that are related to literacy. We're going to have Braille machines, we're going to have an old-fashioned letter press where kids can pull a broadsheet, they can lay down some font and pull out a printed item. Where Lamar is showing kids how they can build billboard, and there's going to be all kinds of children's museum and the boys and girls clubs, and there's going to be story times intermittent through that day. We've got a puppet show at 10 a.m. at the Mavericks. We got a biggest bedtime story ever put on by Fred Rogers Productions at 4 o'clock. And we have a jazz trio at 5 o'clock at Kelly Strayhorn. And all kinds of other little surprises going on. So that's what we're doing. And
holy.
And the best thing is it's really easy to register. While people can certainly walk in and into sessions, it's best if they register. And our website is pittsburghbookfestival.org. pittsburghbookfestival.org. They can register for sessions, they can register to volunteer, and they can donate if they would like. We're
yes.
not averse to that. So that's what's going on, and we're pretty darn excited about it.
I would think so.
And thanks to Marshall for having this vision.
Thank you, Marshall.
Yes, well, Marshall.
Just add a couple. So, you know, Rachel, as we started this, it was even before the curtain came down, the pandemic curtain. Mm-hmm. And but we continued to do what we could throughout that. And more I began to see it and trying to get people to understand it as part of what I called the cultural reemergence in Pittsburgh. Mm. And, you know, to adding to Pittsburgh's wonderful cultural traditions and all the things that go on, adding a book festival seemed to be like, you know, that could be maybe something nice we could do. And I think that's resonated pretty well. The support that's come from the community, from, you know, the literary community, the mm-hmm. civic community, the commercial community, all the way around is just incredible. And it's manifesting itself in what we're able to do. So, you know, Laurie gave a great description of this incredible lineup for kids and those kinds of activities. And, you know, we have a Pulitzer Prize winning writer. We have a National Book Award winning author. We have nationally known Pittsburgh authors or nationally known and recognized. We have authors from Pittsburgh who are not so well known, and we hope this will help make them better known. And,
yes.
you know, it's a dual purpose of rising, enabling Pittsburgh to rise higher on the being recognized nationally as an incredible, you know, literate city, if you will, and then which will attract more nationally from not from Pittsburgh folks to begin thinking about coming here, and then also will enhance the status of our own authors and demonstrating what we produce here, and that they should be getting, you know, that kind of national recognition as well. So it's pretty exciting. It's challenging as anything. It's an incredible amount of hard work, but we've had great people, and it's coming together. It's just going to be amazing. And we thank you again for what you're going to be contributing.
Go ahead, Rachel.
Oh, I was just saying, I am just so excited about this opportunity. And when you were talking about having the puppet show and the interactive things for kids, my heart just fluttered, because I grew up, I would go to the Kennedy Center when I was a kid, and I grew up in the DC area, and just being immersed in these kinds of activities you take that stuff with you for a lifetime. And it really kind of, again, I think does this great job of, you fall in love with storytelling and being a part of the world around you and connecting with other people. So this is just a great way to, you know, continue that kind of positive community here in Pittsburgh. So I can't wait.
Mm. And so Yins Are Good is going to have a table as well. I mentioned this a couple episodes ago, I believe, a little teaser, but we're going to be there. a teaser, if you will, in Bakery Square. We're going to be there and hoping that, you know, folks can share like we do when we do little pop-ups. Well, where I first met you, Marshall, and right. learned about this at the Bloomfield Market. But, right. You know, and hoping, because that's the idea, right? Sharing stories mm-hmm. and finding all these ways that, as I always say, that we're more alike than we are different, and finding connections through our stories.
And making community out of all of it, which is really,
yes.
really critical, I think, at least in my own mind, I think.
Oh my gosh, yes. And speaking of, and since we're talking about storytelling and community and Rachel, you know, what you had mentioned as well, can we just kind of dive in and talk a bit about the importance of storytelling in the sense of building community? And as you were saying, how sharing your story has helped you so much, as you know, as well as others, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think some of my most fond memories growing up was every night before bed, my dad would read my sisters and I, you know, a bedtime story. And when Lori was talking to me about the Festival of Books, again, this rekindled these really fond memories again that I had. And my dad, he would do these different voices and we would act out scenes from the books. And I remember this vividly, how my dad and I, we would turn every book into a cookbook. And so we would try to make fizzy lifting drinks from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, which really was just mix and matching different kinds of seltzer water, you know, so it wasn't too scientific. I remember there's a book called Trumpet of the Swan by E.B. White.
And he, watercress sandwiches.
Watercress sandwiches, exactly. And I remember my dad and I were like, what is watercress? And it's kind of like glorified lettuce, I think. But we would make watercress and mayonnaise sandwiches, which is what they eat in Trumpet of the Swan. And as I was like preparing to have this conversation, I just like raided my bookshelf and I found all these books. I found Trumpet of the Swan. I have my Roald Dahl books. And I was just kind of flipping through and I see how I've written in these books. I've drawn little smiley faces when I was a kid, where I just, these books just spoke to me and resonated. And I think this was kind of right, this early introduction that storytelling is a part of life. And we share our joys and our sorrows, and it builds this sense of empathy. And, you know, I think something that is so important about storytelling is it gives you language. And when I was to just kind of go in to a bit of my own story, unless I'm jumping ahead too quickly.
Oh, no.
So yeah, so I myself was, I've always kind of been a writer, and I like to say my first book I wrote when I was 7, and it's called Rachel and the Giant Baby Sister. Yeah, my little sister was just born, and you know, it's admittedly, it's not my best work. not my best work, but definitely, you know, got to workshop it still. And so I've always kind of been a writer. And growing up, when I was around 15, I started experiencing symptoms of bipolar disorder. And I was diagnosed when I was 17 years old. And honestly, writing became a way to save myself from mental illness. When you are young and when you have a mental illness, especially, you feel really isolated and alone. The stigma is just so pronounced in your life. And writing for me definitely was this outlet to kind of express my pain and what I was going through, and also find language. So I could ask for help and I could get that support. And I just remember growing up, to be honest, wishing that I heard more voices that echoed some of the experiences that I was going through and feeling so alone. And I started my blog. So I started my blog in like early 2012. I just started writing. And it really was more for me just to, again, kind of get out some of these feelings that were kind of dominating how I felt about myself and my relationships, the world around me. And the first comment I ever got on my blog, and I will remember this forever, was an individual. And he actually was, when he was like typing this comment, he was like, yeah, I live in Saudi Arabia. And what he told me in his comment, he said, the most beautiful words in any language are, you are not alone. And I was that just resonated with me. And really, I mean, it made me hopeful. It made me purposeful, you know, and hope is not something you keep for yourself, right? Hope is something you share with other people. And so after that experience, it really kind of got me thinking, and I was just asking myself, you know, what kind of story do I want to be my legacy? You know, is this a sad story? Is it a resilient story? And I realized, yeah, it's sad, it's resilient, it's joyful. And that collection of writing came together to write my memoir, Instability in Six Colors, which is about mental health and mental illness and the experiences that people can have. But ultimately, I think it is a story about resilience and hope and learning how to love yourself and let other people love you. And I just am so grateful to have different opportunities to just share my message and try to connect with other people, because again, we all experience mental health in some way or another, and we're all storytellers. And so the fact that we have this opportunity to kind of, yeah, weave these stories together and meet different people and find out, like, you know, mental illness, we all have our unique experiences, but it's really universal. We all, again, are kind of called to these experiences, either personally or professionally, whether it's driven by who we are or who we love. So I just thought this was such a great opportunity to create this visible platform to say, yeah, we Pittsburghers, we are proud to tell our stories.
And that's why we're calling the festival this year Pittsburgh Through the Pages, because so many of our authors, maybe 95% of them, like Rachel, live in Pittsburgh, or they used to live in Pittsburgh, like Nathaniel Philbrick, who lives in Massachusetts but went to Alderdice, and or they write about Pittsburgh. So we have two authors who are talking about the environmental issues that affect Western Pennsylvania. Eliza Griswold, who's a, maybe Marshall has mentioned this already, who's a Pulitzer Prize winner, and Chris Mayer, who's a Wall Street Journal writer who lives in Pittsburgh, who's talking about water supply. These are all Pittsburgh related. So your story is part of ours, Rachel, and we're so glad you're going to be with us.
And I'm excited. So I did, admittedly, I've got to out myself, I grew up in the DC area, but I moved to Pittsburgh in 2008, and I have a Pittsburgh Bridge tattoo, so I'm very committed to the city. So, yes, I'm leaning in hard to my Pittsburgh identity. It's the Rachel Carson Bridge. I went.
Yes.
There you go. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, good. So we'll allow it. So we can say yes. You are. Okay.
Yes, I get my Pittsburgh card. Excellent. Yeah.
So. I love that Pittsburgh Through the Pages. And like you said, 30 authors and 25 poets, and it's so wonderful.
Yeah. You know, I was with, and Rachel, you probably appreciate this, I was with Ken Gormley this morning.
Oh, yes.
Because I did a little, you know, Laurie and I divide up all these things. We're getting a lot of places to talk about the book festival. So for a small group of very cantankerous retired people, at the JCC, the Jewish Community Center, they asked me to come talk about the book festival. And I said, well, all right, I can talk about the book festival for hours at a time, but that really was boring. So I was able to snag Ken, who's going to be speaking there, talk about his book, and a lot about his book in terms of, you know, Pittsburgh and its heart and the kinds of people that are here, and all these mixes of, you know, the Croatians and the Serbians that fight, and but, you know, when push comes to shove, they all kind of come together and support each other, and having these stories, and your story is a perfect example of why this is so, I think, so important to do, and to share these stories and to share our commonality, it comes down to. So anyway, it was kind of good to hear that, and good to know that the Duquesne folks, they've got it.
And if you see Ken again, please tell him I am grading all of my finals. I am being very diligent about grading those final papers. They will be submitted on time. So just
there you go. I'll make sure he knows.
And what is the name of Ken's book? You mentioned
The Heiress of Pittsburgh.
Ah, yes, The Heiress of Pittsburgh.
Yeah, it's his first novel. It's just, you know, he's written some very well received and respected histories, and so he's a novel, and he got a little kidding because there's a tiny bit, you know, he acknowledges a tiny bit, like all first novels, right, are tiny bit autobiography in there. The protagonist is a Harvard lawyer, law school graduate, so which he is, and so forth, but. It really is a Pittsburgh story, it's great. So he was gracious as can be, and I think I'm introducing him at the festival, so I get to do that again.
I think you are.
Yeah, so it's a good guy. And by the way, his chief of staff, I mean, Pittsburgh is a village, and his chief of staff now, Dan Gilman, was the city council person for where Laurie and I live. Shadyside Air neighborhoods and part of Squirrel Hill, and was then the chief of staff to the former Mayor Peduto, and now is President Gormley's chief of staff, and was very instrumental in early on in all this in opening doors for us with some of our key sponsors like Google and Duolingo and Bakery Square and those kinds of folks. So, you know, again, the kind of thing of the support we got and how it's coming home to really help produce something that's pretty cool.
I was just going to ask, that's funny, because I was going to ask you who in particular through this process, and I know, I know that Marshall, Lori, neither of you have been very busy. You have a lot of time. You have a lot of time in your hands. But I was going to ask through all of this, you know, were there any people or just little stories or moments that really stood out to you about, you know, folks coming together to help or, and so Dan's a great example of that. I'm sure you have hundreds of them.
Well, I think that one of our unsung heroes is good old Bob Hoover, who was the retired book editor for the Post-Gazette.
Yes.
And he's a legend in Pittsburgh. And because of his connections, now that he's retired, but in spite of the fact that he's retired, he still has connections to many publishers across the country. And because of his connections, we are blessed with the wonderful authors that we do have. He is without fear and calls anybody and begs and pleads. And so we're really delighted that he worked so hard on this and behind the scenes, and nobody said thank you, and he's not gotten any prizes, but he has our heart and soul for what he's doing.
And you know, Rachel, just what that's a perfect example. And also, you know, the way this all started was the way I've begun to think about it is, and I actually used this little phrase yesterday. Laurie and I were talking to somebody from WESA, which was, I just started making cold calls, walking in saying, hey, there's this idea. You know, 200 cities in Pittsburgh have around the country, rather, have book festivals. Pittsburgh doesn't. What do you think of that idea? And a lot of people said, it's a wonderful idea, but I don't have the time to work on it. I said, well, if we could get the work on it done, what do you think? And then they would introduce you to other people. And you know, slowly and brick by brick, you kind of built the foundation. And so then Laurie came along. When Laurie makes warm calls, because she knows every damn person in the tri-state area. And so, you know, that just supercharged everything and turbocharged it, and here we are. You talk to people. That's what people say. Well, you know, that's what I did for my whole career, was talk to people. I'm an old retired lobbyist, basically, and you know, you talk to people and you find out things about them, and you find out all the things you have in common, and you have ideas, and they say, you know, yeah, I could help with that, or that sounds like something good, and so forth.
Exactly, because you don't know. You know, you don't know till you ask. About so many things. Exactly. You don't know.
Yeah. And I feel like that is the Pittsburgh ethos. I mean, our patron saint, Mr. Rogers, was all about, you know, look to the helpers and realizing that we are all neighbors. So we have this, you know, shared vision to make our city even better and more inclusive.
Mm-hmm. So, and getting back, we got some specific logistics, of course, but let's say the date. I mean, I've said it before on the show, but May 14th, yes, Saturday.
PittsburghBookFestival.org. Mm-hmm. We would love to have, we're still recruiting and signing up volunteers. You can volunteer through the website for a couple of hours at this venue or that venue. It's going to be, volunteers are a critical part of this. And spread the word to come down and take a look and see what a book festival is about. You know, it's interesting that we were asked yesterday about what was one of some of the challenges that we faced. And one of the challenges was, what exactly is a book festival about? And so we realized, early on when I was just making up pieces of paper, I had a little piece of paper that said, what happens at a book festival? And, I think we have something on the website about, what exactly goes on at a book festival. So part of what we hope we'll accomplish here is people will see and Rachel used this term earlier, energy. The sort of the energy of and the proximity of all these literary related things, kids programs and adult programs and poets reading and books available for sale and literary organizations talking about what they do. All that energy nearby and people going back and forth will make people see the value and feel like we got to do this again. This should be an annual thing like it is in so many other cities around the country.
And I think Pittsburgh is a city of momentum. And so I feel like this is something that is going to be a staple in our culture, and kind of the flavor of Pittsburgh. So I'm just excited that I get to participate in the very first one.
Yes. And so folks can go onto the website and get more information, about the venues or what might be where.
Yes. Okay. The website is terrific. So there's listings. The poetry tent is, there's going to be poets every 15 minutes, but you can register for an hour slot at a time. I wanted to recognize our keynote speaker is Toy Derricott, who is...
Sorry, I love her.
We all love her. We all love her. And she is the grand dame of American poetry. I mean, she is just a legend herself. And she will be speaking at the launch party on Friday night at the Maverick. And if you want to attend that, you can buy tickets online on our website. She will be there. And then she will be in conversation with the City of Siloam's poet laureates. There's a youth poet laureate, and then there's a grown-up one, and Celeste Gainey is the grown-up one, and Danielle Obisi Orlo is the youth poet laureate. And I love the fact that we have three different generations really talking about poetry. So
yes,
Toy is senior, and Danielle is late teens, early 20s, I'm not sure, and Celeste is somewhere in between. So it will be kind of fun to hear the three of them in conversation. And that will be at the poetry tent at 1 o'clock at Bakery Square. So that's a pretty cool thing. And we're very excited to have Toy. She's won so many awards in the last couple of years and been recognized.
She is. So with our theater company, we used to produce an event for Swan Day, which was Support Women Artists Now Day. And it was founded by two American women. And it's now across the world. And the idea is the last Saturday of March, you just find a way to celebrate women in the arts. And it's for everybody. So you can just, get a group together and watch a bunch of movies directed by women or written by, or whatever you want to do. But I created or founded Swan Day Pittsburgh. And it evolved into... basically, it was a one-night event, and there were 10-minute performances from all the different mediums. So you would have a short play, a music set. We would have dance pieces. We had a fashion show one year, which was amazing. We had live artists. We had all these things just in one night, and sometimes poets. And Toy actually one year was in it. And I was, I reached out, and she said, "Of course, I'd love to." I was like, "Oh my gosh,
wow,
Toy, she's wonderful."
Yes.
Because when you mentioned that, so the launch party where Toy will be that Friday, the 13th, and how you can go on, to the site and buy tickets for the festival itself on the 14th, is there a cost for any of,
Oh, I'm so sorry.
That's all right. I like it. Is there a cost?
Yeah, it's totally free. Yeah. Everything is free. And the reason we've been able to do it free is that we've gotten such a good response from Marshall's sponsors in the beginning. And I hit the pavement sometime in September through December, and we got some other corporate sponsors, and the county has been very generous with a infrastructure and tourism grant. So we hope that we can continue to have the festival as a free event. There is rumor, it's truth, that Billy Porter is coming, and he will be at Kelly Strayhorn at noon. However, it was sold out in 3.5 hours.
I was going to bring it up, and then I thought, should I even bring it up?
Because we're very proud that he agreed to join us. He happened to be in Pittsburgh for CMU graduation, and he said he got word about the festival, and through multiple channels, he said he agreed to come. And this is his neighborhood. This is where he grew up.
Wonderful.
Wonderful. So it's kind of a vote of confidence that we have Billy with us, but unfortunately it is sold out. One other group I want to tell you about is KDKA, and they stepped up to the plate in the beginning to be the presenting sponsor, and we're going to have lots of KDKA talent at the festival, and and kids are going to be painting book nooks, and the police are coming and donating books to the kids. It's going to be a hilaria.
Oh, wow. I just think this is something that is inherently Pittsburgh, that I think it is about time. So I'm so excited for the event.
I could not agree with you more. That is just, that's exactly how I feel about it too.
It's great. It's exciting. And, you know, people like you, I mean, Tressa, your help, you know, was terrific. And it's that kind of response that we've gotten, you know, in so many different quarters that really makes it happen. And we're just, we can't thank you enough for your interest, your willingness to you know, join this one onto your great podcast programs. And it's the kind of thing that makes it work. So, Rachel, thank you very much.
Of course. Thank you.
Look forward to seeing you in person here in a couple weeks. And that will be terrific.
Yes. And Rachel, I will find you.
Please. I was going to say, I know what our email addresses look like, but I'm excited to put faces to email addresses.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So we can all connect in the wild in real life.
Yes. Because Lori, it's hard to believe that we haven't met in person.
It is hard.
Right? I feel like we have.
I'm going to say what Marshall said. Thank you, Tressa, for getting us on in September. And now, again, we appreciate it. And Rachel, I can't wait to meet you. And I want to see the tattoo.
Yeah, well, I have over 60. So
then there'll be one for everybody.
There's
one,
exactly.
Well, hello.
You decided to return.
I did. Mm-hmm. I did. It was touch and go there for a minute, but I'm back. Guess who's back? Back again. Don is back. Tell a friend.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that.
Of course.
So welcome back.
It's good to be back.
2 weeks.
I know.
Was it glorious for you?
It was a glorious break.
So first, yes. We're going to talk about where you were, because this is the big reveal. In my mind, anyway.
Sure.
Last week's name that neighborhood, but really it was. Where in the U.S. is Don DeJulio?
Where in the U.S. is Don DeJulio?
This is delightful. It's the musical segment.
Mm-hmm.
So.
That's what you get after 2 weeks from me.
Boy, we're all so happy about it.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to just quickly review. We had some points, and then you're going to tell us where you were.
Sure.
This city's Jefferson Memorial Park. Mm-hmm. This city is the disco ball capital of the world.
The city has the famous Seelbach Hotel, which inspired The Great Gatsby. This city, their official cocktail is the Old Fashioned. Hometown of Muhammad Ali, Diane Sawyer, Jennifer Lawrence, Hunter S. Thompson. It sits along the Ohio River and is home to the oldest Mississippi-style steamboat in existence. Joseph E. Seagram and Sons opened the world's largest distillery there. And it is a leading producer of bonded bourbon whiskey. Don, where in the U.S. were you?
I was in Louisville, Kentucky.
Ding, 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 ding. Louisville.
Louisville.
Kentucky is right. You're right, Don. That's
I am
where
right.
You were.
Yeah, the locals say you got to put rocks in your mouth to say the name properly. Yeah. Louisville.
Because we have a friend, Stuart, right, from Louisville. And I remember he was the first person who, because we were saying Louisville. He's like, please stop talking.
Yeah. He's from a small town outside of Louisville, but close enough.
So the people want to know.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy yourself?
I sure did.
Good.
I sure did. My three best friends and I went on a tour of the Kentucky Bourbon Trail. Mm-hmm. It's an honor to my late father. We were going to go the summer after he passed in 2020, and then the world shut down.
Sure.
So we finally had a week, and we took full advantage of it, and it was glorious.
Yay.
Yay.
I'm so glad you had that time.
Me too.
But I know you're more glad
to be back for Name That Neighborhood.
Yes.
One of the things we did not learn along the Kentucky Bourbon Trail was the disco ball fact.
Yeah, how funny. That's
strange.
No idea. 90%.
Mm-hmm. I wish we had known.
I know. You could have brought,
I could have brought back a disco ball, or at least brought it back to our Airbnb. Right?
I can only imagine.
We did stay. The place, I'm not going to reveal the address, but it was on Muhammad Ali Boulevard, so I knew that one, too.
Oh, was it?
Uh-huh.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Well, welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
And in honor of your return.
Yes.
I have five statements of fact.
Of course you do. You've been saving them up.
Well, and just as a reminder, too, that 2 weeks ago, you know, Ellen had five and went 5 for 5. But that is
no pressure.
Zero pressure for you.
I actually feel zero pressure.
Oh, good.
So this could tank or it could sink or swim at this point.
Your neighborhoods of choice. Etna or Ambridge?
Okay. Etna, not to be confused with the health insurance company.
Correct.
Yes.
That would be correct.
That'd be an A-E-T-N-A. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, good.
Good. It's off to a good start. Very entertaining. The listeners are glad I'm back.
Oh, yes. Here we go. One. Artists looking for space to hone their craft should head over to this neighborhood to check out 448 Artist Studios, which provides monthly rental spaces at very reasonable prices.
Etna.
Wow, you were on it, and you were right. So you know that, eh?
I've heard of it, yes.
Yeah. So 448 Studios, located at, wait for it, 448 Butler Street.
Appropriately.
So they are part of, it's tough because I can't figure out if it's singular or plural, but the studios are is part of the Store Express storage facility. And the 448 Studios, they have prepared their spaces to function as art studios or rehearsal spaces for local artists. There are over 67 art spaces that vary in size from 100 square feet to 800 square feet. They feature amenities such as natural skylights, modern ventilation systems, and even cool, unique chalkboard walls. There's even a community lounge, if you like. So their pricing, I personally found the spaces, the cost of the spaces to be quite reasonable indeed. Anywhere from $400 to $600 a month.
That's not bad.
For a rehearsal space?
Yeah, that's not bad at all.
It's really good.
Yeah.
Or real good.
Real good.
What's also real good, you're one for one.
I got one for one.
Number two, from 1966 until 2016, this neighborhood hosted Nationality Days, an annual heritage festival celebrating its area's diverse ethnic pride.
Ambridge.
Woohoo! You are correct. It is Ambridge. So yeah, these Nationality Days. So basically, they're as I said, it was celebrating the diversity of the neighborhood. So there was a diversity in food, music, entertainment, and it united the community as everyone remembered their specific origins. And it was organized by the Ambridge Chamber of Commerce. It was a 3-day festival. Mm. It took place in May in the heart of the downtown commercial district. And thousands of people would attend. And when we're talking about this diversity, Italian, Ukrainian, Greek, Polish, German, Croatian, Slovenian. Imagine how good that food was.
You can probably smell it driving into town.
Oh my gosh, that'd be the best. Mm-hmm. And the booths were sponsored by numerous Ambridge churches. As I said, live entertainment, but arts and crafts, things for the kids. And according to an ad that appeared in the Beaver County Times that first year in 1966, the event featured food booths from 10 different churches and was set up on Merchant Street between 6th and 7th. And then eventually it grew to 4 blocks and many, many more booths from many more churches. And as I mentioned, the last one was in 2016. Hmm. But how cool, it lasted for so many years.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I love that idea.
Maybe they should kick it back up again.
Yeah. I would go.
They'll do it just for you, Tress.
Can you guys get that going again just for... Okay. Number three. Established near this neighborhood in the mid-1740s, Logstown was one of the largest and most politically significant American Indian communities to form in western Pennsylvania during the 18th century.
Ambridge?
It is Ambridge! Yes! Hmm. Logstown.
Okay. Logstown
was established by the Shawnee, returning to their homelands from which they had been driven by wars with the Iroquois. And like other American Indian towns in the Upper Ohio Valley, the population was culturally and linguistically diverse, including Delaware from eastern Pennsylvania and the Seneca from western New York, and of course the Shawnee as well. And regardless of their origin, those who lived there were drawn to that region because of its abundant game and autonomy from colonial governments. Hmm. And in the spring of 1752, agents from the Ohio Company, which was the land company formed by prominent Virginians, treated with the American Indians at Logstown to gain permission to build a post at the forks of the Ohio. And the American Indians, they were interested in expanding their trade with the British, and the Virginians wanted a toehold, if you will, for settlement in the region that would preempt occupation by either the French or the Pennsylvanians. And so, basically, they also greased the wheels, if I can say that, of the negotiation, offered 1,000 pounds worth of presents to the American Indians, and that was a huge sum in those days. And so the Virginians did receive permission to construct a storehouse for the fur trade at the Forks of the Ohio. But the American Indians were uncomfortable with the idea of the Ohio Company planting settlers there. But as you may have realized, or maybe not, but these events helped to set the stage for the French construction of Fort Duquesne and the outbreak of the French and Indian War.
Sure, sure. Mm-hmm. I'm still stuck on the fact that the Ohio Company is run by Virginians.
Yeah, maybe they didn't think that through.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah. So yes, and of course, yeah, because that land was so sought after at that time, and that's some of the stuff that was going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know what else is going on? Number four.
We are.
We
to
are.
To number four.
Ooh. Rear End Gastropub and Garage, a scratch kitchen restaurant housed in an automotive garage, opened for business in this neighborhood in July 2021.
Etna.
You were confident on that too, I think.
Yeah, because the architecture in Etna suggests to me more industrial.
Yeah.
Thought there might be a garage gastropub. You know, you never know.
I like that. I like that thought. So yes, the Rear End Gastropub and Garage is indeed housed in an automotive garage that dates back to the 1940s. And as their website explains, during that pre-interstate period of America in the 40s, people and their families often traveled across storied highways such as Route 40, Lincoln Highway, Route 66, encountering regional foods and a variety of cultural influences along the way. So in that spirit, their seasonal menu is a road trip that explores some of those Midwestern, Southern, Southwestern, and Western dishes and techniques. I love that. I just love that thought.
We should go there.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Let's do it. Well, Don.
Yeah. Last but certainly not least.
Question number five.
Statement of fact number five.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Oh, you're going to like this.
Oh, I can't wait.
Now, you may recall.
Don't like it when it starts that way. As we learned from the recollection episode. Yes.
Back in episode 50, we spoke of the Harmony Society, founded by German immigrant George Rapp. He and his followers built the town of Harmony in Butler County.
Sure.
Ring a bell?
Sure.
Okay. Well, this Harmony Society spent 10 years in Butler, then migrated to the state of Indiana, then came back to Pennsylvania in 1824, settling not back in Butler, but in this neighborhood where they stayed until the society dissolved in 1905.
Well, Ambridge, of course.
Ambridge, of course, he says. He of the perfect score.
Take that, Ellen.
Oh, no. Them's fighting words. Mm-hmm. No. Hooray! That's yes, good. So you say, of course, because?
Because I wanted to make a statement.
Oh, no, I thought you knew.
I didn't actually know.
No, because I didn't know.
Yeah, you go big or you go home. You say it with gusto and people believe you whether it's true or not.
No, I didn't know if it's that you knew that it's Old Economy Village.
No.
See, I had no idea that those were connected.
Me neither.
So imagine my delight when I discovered that Old Economy Village was the connection. We had just talked about the Harmony Society, in a recent episode, and they came back. Okay, it is true. So they settled what we now call Old Economy Village along the Ohio River. When they founded the town, they called it Okonomi, eventually turning into how we pronounce economy. The leaders purchased 3,000 acres of land with rich soil for farming. The location was ideal for shipping, being there on the Ohio, for shipping their products to markets on the Ohio, to the Mississippi rivers, and further west as those areas were being settled. And the village was planned for efficiency. So now they had spent 20 years in the U.S. altogether and experienced building two other towns. So they came in and they knew what the community would need. So the church and the houses of George Rapp and his son were located at the center of town. Businesses included a store, post office, mechanics building, wine cellar, warehouse, and granary.
All the essentials. Wine cellar.
Exactly. It's high up there. The feast hall, used for communal dinners and concerts with a natural history museum on the first floor, was also located in the center of town. And then directly surrounding the center were other members' houses, and 80 of those survive today.
And this was the 1800s, you said?
This was late 18 until 1905. So they were there, oh no, not late 18, I'm sorry. They got there in 1824 to 1905.
Yeah, it's interesting to think that in 1824 they had a museum.
That, yeah.
Prior to that.
Right? And was it, and I don't know if it was of their own, maybe their, I don't know. And it is a National Historic Landmark.
Hmm.
Don.
Tressa.
What a flourish.
A whirlwind.
Yes.
Yes.
What a way to return.
Yeah.
I thank you. I don't think there's even anything else to say.
I don't think there is. It's good to be back.
Yeah?
It's good to be back with perfection. Mm. How you've missed me.
Oh, there aren't enough words.
No, they're not. You want me to go on vacation again? Is that what you're saying?
I mean, it's a thought.
I think every other week I can...
No.
I'll spend every other week in Louisville.
Thank you. See you next time.
See you next time.
And on that triumphant note, we will be bringing this episode, episode 53, to a close. I am your host, Tressa Glover. Huge thanks again to Lori and Marshall and Rachel for the wonderful conversation. Please do be sure, listeners, to check out our show notes for all of the info about the Greater Pittsburgh Festival of Books on May 14th. And be sure to stop by the Yinz Are Good table. We will be at Bakery Square in the conservatory, which is, just look for a lot of windows in that area. It's this gorgeous room. And that's where we're going to be. We're going to have a few different ways for you to share a story if you want, a memory, some of your favorite things. It's going to be fun. Thank you so much for listening today. I hope you have a good week, surrounded by good people. And until next time, my friends, be safe, be kind, be good. Special thanks to Jennifer Zaltman, Don DiGiulio, and as always, for our most fabulous artwork, Mike Rabino.